Before we jump into today's episode, we've got a free resource you won't want to miss. It's called The Robot Race: Could AI Ever Replace Humanity? A thought-provoking ebook exploring the rise of artificial intelligence, what it means to be human, and how Christians can think biblically in this new tech age. If you've ever asked, can machines become conscious? Or does AI challenge our faith? This is for you. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, we've got a free resource you won't want to miss. It's called The Robot Race: Could AI Ever Replace Humanity? A thought-provoking ebook exploring the rise of artificial intelligence, what it means to be human, and how Christians can think biblically in this new tech age. If you've ever asked, can machines become conscious? Or does AI challenge our faith? This is for you. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Hello and welcome along to Unbelievable. I'm Justin Briley, your host for the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together every week here as part of our programming on Faith Explored as part of Premier Christian Radio's Saturday Output. But lots of people listen to the show via the internet, via the podcast. And if you want to join them, why not go to the website and find the latest program there? Lots of other features and resources too. Not too late to order Unbelievable, the conference on DVD as well. All of that available from premierchristianradio.com/Unbelievable. Really exciting show today. Not a very Christmassy theme, but certainly an interesting one on Hitler. Was he a Christian? Was he anti-Christian? Two guests are going to be duking that out on today's programme. If you can stick around for the profile straight after Unbelievable this afternoon, between 4 and 5, you'll hear the story of John Lawson, former gangster turned Christian. Amazing story he's got. Listen out for that with Sam Hales between 4 and 5. And don't forget lots of your feedback as well towards the end of today's show. If you've sent in an email recently, then perhaps in response to Science Mike on the programme last week, Finding God in the Waves, his new book in conversation with atheist Ben Watzer, you may hear it read out. So stick around for that as well. And I really hope you enjoy today's programme. You're unbelievable. Well, on today's programme, joining me to discuss the question, was Hitler anti-Christian, are Richard Weikart and Richard Carrier. Now, Hitler's religious beliefs, or lack of them, and to what extent the Nazi regime was driven by Christian beliefs, have long been debated by Christians and atheists. Well, I've got a Christian and an atheist joining me on the programme today to debate that. Richard Weikart is Professor of History at California State University, and he's a Senior Fellow for the Centre for Science and Culture of the Discovery Institute. His new book, Hitler's Religion: The Twisted Beliefs That Drove the Third Reich, aimed to show why Hitler was neither an atheist nor a Christian, but a pantheist who believed nature was God. He's going to be explaining that and how that fact drove Hitler's Nazi ideology. Richard Carrier is a historian, atheist activist, author, public speaker and blogger, well known as a proponent of the mythicist view of Jesus. He's been on the show before talking about that. He's also researched the religious views of Hitler and the Nazis, as detailed in his book Hitler, Homer, Bible, Christ. And there he aimed to show that anti-Christian quotes purportedly made by Hitler are in fact fabrications, and that Hitler was happy to be perceived as a Christian throughout his life. So we're going to be discussing Hitler's religious views, how far it influenced the ideology of the Third Reich. Welcome along to the programme, Richard and Richard.
Hi.
It's great to have you both. We've got Richard Weikart on by Skype and joining us on the phone, Richard Carrier. So I'll come to you, Richard Weikart, first of all. Good to have you back again. You seem to be producing a lot of books this year. I had you on earlier in the year on your former book. But just tell us a little bit about this particular one, because you've on and off been researching Hitler, the Nazi regime, for many years, haven't you?
Yes, I published a book earlier in 2004 called From Darwin to Hitler, in which the last chapter was really about Hitler. Most of it was about the social Darwinism, evolutionary ethics in Germany. And then I followed that up in 2009 with a book called Hitler's Ethic, which is a look at Hitler's ideology and showing how evolutionary ethics impacted Hitler's ideology. And it was really while I was doing that book on Hitler's ethic that I became interested in this theme of Hitler's religion, because of the back and forth that's been going on between atheists and Christians over, was Hitler an atheist? Was Hitler a Christian? And then a 2003 book that came out called The Holy Reich sort of stimulated my interest as well.
I know that much has been made of the fact that the Catholic Church in Germany, some people say, sort of colluded almost with the Nazi regime. Does that come in at all to your book and that relationship?
Well, most of my book is actually focused specifically on Hitler. I mean, I'm looking at Hitler's ideology, Hitler's religious views. So I don't look at in any great extent the views of Himmler, Rosenberg. I mean, I mentioned those things, of course, as I'm going through it, as I'm talking about Hitler's ideology. So I don't really expand it to look at, say, the role of Pius XII in it, again, except as it impinges just on Hitler himself. So I try to keep the focus very tightly on Hitler in the book.
Last year, Whoopi Goldberg was on a chat show and kind of brought up that thing, which a lot of people sort of assume or is certainly does the rounds online, that, well, didn't you know Hitler was a Christian? So in short, what's your case for people who say that? Why would you say, actually, no, Hitler wasn't a Christian, even though to some it may have looked like he was?
Well, the reason, of course, they say he was a Christian was because there were a number of occasions, and one of the most commonly quoted one comes from an April 1922 speech of Hitler, where Hitler called Jesus his Lord and Savior. You have in the Nazi 25-point program their claim that they were representative positive Christianity. So there were public, there were some things where Hitler was trying to bring himself close to Christianity. But if you look at all of his private conversations, if you look at his testimony of all of his associates, none of his associates who've written anything, either in their diaries, and we do have some diaries of people that were written at the time, as well as subsequently, none of them claim that he was Christian. And in fact, they argue exactly the opposite. They claim he was anti-Christian. And even in public, there in Mein Kampf and in some speeches, Hitler makes anti-Christian comments at a number of times too. So it seems to me there's overwhelming evidence that he was more anti-Christian than Christian.
So if he wasn't a Christian, was he an atheist? That's the other side of this that's often put forward.
Yeah, and that I would actually agree with Richard Carrier on that particular issue, because I think Christians who assume that Hitler was an atheist because he wasn't a Christian are jumping to a wrong conclusion, too. Hitler, I think, did have a sincere belief in some kind of God. And that, again, if you look again at the evidence from his own associates, from private conversations he had, I mean, the evidence seems to point overwhelmingly to the fact that he did believe in some kind of higher being or higher power. But it wasn't the Christian God. In fact, I argue it was pantheism, that is, that nature is God.
We'll get you to unpack a bit about how that would have driven, you know, his particular ideology and so on, what fed into that as well. I mean, very briefly, can you give us a sense of what kind of religious influences impinged on him as he grew up and how that fed into what would become his sort of pantheism, as you call it?
As I show in my book, Hitler's Religion, pantheism was pretty widespread in German and on the intellectual elites throughout the course of the 19th century and on into the early 20th century. And there's been a good deal of scholarship showing that. So it wasn't like an unusual, weird kind of view for a German to take who's widely read. And Hitler did read voraciously. So Hitler, of course, he was baptized as a Catholic. He was confirmed as a Catholic, although there are actually some evidence that he wasn't too happy with the Catholic Church, even at that point when he went through his confirmation ceremony. His dad was a free thinker, though, so his dad was anti-Catholic, pretty much. His mom was very pious, though, so in growing up, he sort of had some mixed influences coming in from his family situation. But after he left home, there's no evidence that he ever attended church after that point, except for funerals, weddings, special occasions like that. And if you read Hitler's Vienna by Brigitte Hamann and a scholarship about Hitler during the First World War, all of the scholars who've written on that suggest that even from a very young age, he was pretty pretty antagonistic toward the Catholic Church and his upbringing.
So even though he never left the Catholic Church, he was never, as far as I'm aware, excommunicated, as far as you can see, he was either very nominal or even antagonistic at some level towards it.
Yes. And Joseph Goebbels also never left the Catholic Church, even though he's very obviously antagonistic toward it. Read his diaries, read many other conversations he had. So This was not an unusual thing. Ernst Haeckel, in fact, I bring up some examples in my book about it, too. Ernst Haeckel, for example, who was the leading German Darwinian biologist in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, never left the Protestant church until 1910, after he'd been criticizing it for 40 years or more. So it was not, wasn't an unusual thing for people not to leave the church, even though they had rejected the church's teachings.
Well, thank you very much for joining me on the program today. And we're going to be joined by another Richard now, Richard Carrier, who is great to have in conversation with Richard Weikart. Richard Carrier has also done quite a bit of research on the issue of Hitler's religion. Richard, welcome along again to the program today. What got you interested initially in looking into some of the historical arguments about whether Hitler was or wasn't a Christian?
Well, it started many years ago when I was in graduate school. I was studying ancient history and the origins of Christianity and ancient science and so forth. And one of the things that I was doing, of course, is learning how to translate scholarly articles in other languages. And so Dan Barker of the Freedom From Religion Foundation knew about this, and he kept getting these quotes thrown at him by Christians that in which Hitler is basically radically anti-Christian and essentially making Hitler look like an atheist. And he wanted me to research whether those quotes, the English translations, were accurate translations of the Germans. And that led me to discover that, in fact, they were not. That, in fact, there were huge distortions in the English translation commissioned by Hugh Trevor Roper. So it's the only English translation available in print, which is called Hitler's Table Talk. It's unreliable in this regard. And that's a whole other long story unto itself. And then when you go back and look at the actual German, you find the reality is much more complicated and nuanced.
I believe that this particular chapter that became part of your wider book, Hitler, Homo, Bible, Christ, has sort of had a bit of an update this year as well, that the person who, as it were, is behind that book, it's been seen that actually your research has, played into a new understanding of Hitler's table talk.
Yeah, absolutely. My original research I published in German Studies Review back in 2003, and ever since that, it's actually had an impact on the whole field of Hitler studies. Richard Steigman Gall, for example, cites it in his book, and so does Weikart. Weikart mentions my research and how it impacts how we understand the table talk, and leads, I think, has led to more responsible use of that source, even in Weikart's book. And then now, lately, in the past few years, Professor Mikael Nielsen of Uppsala University in Sweden has picked up this mantle. Because what I did in my article is I published in German Studies Review what I found and that it's a problem and that more research is needed. So Nielsen is now doing that more research, and he's actually uncovering all kinds of things. He's digging through archives and so forth and is learning more and more about the path of the manuscripts of the Table Talk and how they came to exist and the fact that there is actually worries about the English translation being inaccurate that were kept hidden from the public for many years. So there's a whole other backstory to this.
This Table Talk book was supposedly based on notes taken by some of Hitler's associates as he sort of spoke at the table, as it were, about his beliefs about religion and so on. But there's been a lot of doubt cast upon whether the translation was correct in the first place, as I understand it, but then even sort of the fact that these notes were actually written down the day after and probably involved something of a reconstitution of what he may or may not have said. But it's fascinating stuff, and obviously as a historian, the kind of thing you're interested in doing. As regards the general tenor of Hitler towards Christianity, though, what's your overall takeaway? Obviously, you don't believe he said some of the very anti-Christian things that have commonly been associated with him. But what is your view about where he stood in terms of religion?
Well, what I've found is that all the passages that even Weikart presents of him attacking Christianity are actually attacking Catholicism and church-based religion. And so this, we have this confusion here between being anti-Christian and being anti-Catholic or anti-church. There are lots and lots of Christians, millions and millions of Christians, even today, who are anti-Catholic and anti-church and say almost the exact same kinds of things that Hitler said against institutionalized religion, against sectarianism, against Catholic doctrines and so forth, such as worship of saints or transubstantiation and so on. So we really, if we're going to look at the text, we have to tease out this difference between how Hitler used the word in German Christentum. Does he mean Christianity in this broad abstract sense that we mean right now in this conversation? Or did he mean, in fact, actually institutionalized Christianity, Catholicism and the major churches. And usually, it's almost always he's attacking Catholicism. And when we look at his views, we see the backstory that he definitely was anti-Catholic in private. In public, he was not so much. In public, he really tried to play up his Catholicism. But in private, he was totally reversed on that and actually was advocating, and we can show this point by point by point, that his positions were very much in line with this very sort of bizarre sect of Christianity called positive Christianity, developed by Nazis and Nazi sympathizers in the early 20th century.
So you still believe whatever he believed about Catholicism, he still held some sort of, albeit warped, view of Christianity?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, that's my view of it, for
okay.
sure.
Well, we'll come back to Richard Weikart in a moment's time and see what he has to say in response to this. Looking forward to this. It often comes up in all kinds of conversations here on Unbelievable, the Hitler card. Often it's invoked as Godwin's law. If you play Hitler, then you've automatically lost the debate, I think is the rule. But we're not playing that one on today's show. That would be a bit tough. If you want to get involved in the debate, of course, as ever, you can get in touch via email or send me a message via Facebook and Twitter. Be pleased to hear from you if you've got a take on the question of Hitler, his religion. Was he Christian, anti-Christian, something else? Do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Be interested to hear from you. Facebook.com/unbelievablejb is the way to follow on Facebook. Send me a message that way. And of course, the Twitter @unbelievablejb to follow on Twitter.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
And don't forget, you can get in touch via the website. So do find the latest show. Links to both my guests, Richard Weikart and Richard Carrier, and their various works to do with today's discussion at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. We're asking today, was Hitler anti-Christian? Not a very Christmassy show, I will admit. We've got something much more much more Christmassy for you on Christmas Eve next week. But for the moment, this is coming out the back of the fact Richard Weikart has a new book out. Richard Weikart is Professor of History at California State University. And his new book, Hitler's Religion, The Twisted Beliefs That Drove the Third Reich, aims to show Hitler was neither an atheist nor a Christian, but a pantheist who believed nature was God. Now, what we just heard there from Richard Carrier, Richard W., is that as far as he can see, certainly Hitler seemed in private anti-Catholic, anti-church, the institution, but not necessarily anti-Christian. He held a sort of Christian belief himself, perhaps this Christian positivism that was popular. What's your take on that?
Well, first of all, I think we need to define what Christianity is, and that's been a big problem, I think, in the debate here. Over, because if we're going to argue, you know, was Hitler anti-Christian, we need to know what we're talking about. And in my book, I use the World Council of Churches definition of Christianity, which is the claim that Christ is divine, that is, that Christ is deity, as well as that there is a triune God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so I use that as sort of just a very basic definition of Christianity. And if you look at Hitler's discussions about Jesus and about Christianity, there is absolutely no evidence that Hitler believed that Jesus was divine. And in fact, there's a lot of evidence that suggests he didn't think that Jesus was divine. For example, this is just one of the stronger pieces of evidence, but I mean, I've a lot of it in my book. In a speech that Hitler gave in 1926, he made the comment that the work which Christ had begun but could not finish, he, meaning Hitler, would complete. So Hitler thought that when Hitler believed that Jesus existed, certainly. And in fact, by the way, Hitler did actually have actually a positive view of Jesus. When he talks about Jesus, he actually thinks of Jesus as being a noble Aryan fighter. He thought Jesus was not Jewish. He thought Jesus was an Aryan fighter who was fighting against the Jews. And he thought that Jesus was anti-Semitic. And so he actually does speak positively about Jesus, but he doesn't think that Jesus died on the cross for his sins. He doesn't think that Jesus rose from the dead. He criticizes the idea of Jesus' resurrection very directly. And he, at one point, Goebbels, just to give another example, and the one I just quoted about him, you know, Jesus, the work that, that Jesus had was not able to complete. Hitler saw Jesus as being a martyr. He was killed by the Jews. But That was it. And Hitler, and Jesus had not been able to complete his work of just trying to destroy the Jews, essentially. So Hitler didn't believe that Jesus had his death on the cross or resurrection was a reality. And then let me just give another quotation from May 1943. This is according to Goebbels' diaries. Goebbels said that Hitler had said, "The idiocy of the Christian doctrine of salvation is for our time completely unusable. Nonetheless, there are scholars, educated people, and men in high positions in public life who hang on to it as to a childhood faith. That even today one views the Christian doctrine of salvation as giving direction through a difficult life is completely incomprehensible." So Hitler attacked some of the most basic doctrines of Christianity, and not just Catholic doctrines. Yes, he did attack the doctrine of transubstantiation, as Richard Carrier suggested, but he also attacked the doctrine of salvation. He attacked the doctrine of believing in the Bible. He rejected the Old Testament as Jewish. He rejected all the Pauline epistles because he thought Paul was a sneaky Jewish rabbi who had snuck Bolshevik ideas into Christianity from the very start. So he rejected Christianity from the time Paul on. He idealized Jesus. And so if that makes a person a Christian, but the Muslims do too. Muslims think Jesus was a prophet. So what is identifiably Christian about Hitler's views? It's not there.
Okay. Really interesting. So Richard Carrier, to all intents and purposes, Hitler didn't have any kind of what would be considered even a basic kind of Christian beliefs. So even if he kind of had some views about Jesus, they certainly couldn't have been described as Christian ones. What's your take on that?
Well, I think that's a typical example of excluding a bunch of Christians. I mean, we're now excluding from the definition of Christians Mormons, Unitarians, Quakers, Jehovah's Witnesses, Branch Davidians, People's Temple. So Christianity is a much more diverse group of sectarian beliefs. Not all Christians agree with the divinity of Jesus. Not all Christians believed in the divinity of Jesus, even at the beginning of Christianity. So I think that's a little too narrow to actually analyze this stuff. If you want to look at the actual backstory, the sort of historical context in which Hitler's views arose, we have to look at this development of what's called positive Christianity. It was a German nationalist version of Christianity. It had some similarities with, you find a lot of racist versions of Christianity today, than the white power movement, for example. But it's this idea, it was adopted officially by the Nazi Party in its 25-point program in 1925. So it was actually very public promoting this. And they had these weird beliefs. They definitely were weird. Jesus was an Aryan who was speaking truth to power against the Jews. And they believed that Paul had corrupted the true religion taught by Jesus and made it too Jewish. And this was before Hitler that they actually defined this stuff. And it was anti-institutionalist, anti-sectarian, and very anti-Catholic. And it believed in unifying all Christian sects under a single sect that would be supportive of the state, unified with the state. So they had this idea. When we look at the teachings of Hitler, or the things that Hitler says in private, he says exactly the same thing. He says Jesus was an Aryan who spoke truth to power against the Jews, that Paul corrupted the religion and converted it into Catholicism, which was filled with elaborate Jewish superstitions and elaborate Jewish rites, and all of the other things, the anti-institutionalism, the anti-sectarianism. So especially those particular doctrines, the idea that Paul corrupted and Judaized religion and turned it into Catholicism, and that Jesus was an Aryan, these are very odd beliefs in the context, the galaxy of Christian sectarian beliefs, and yet they're very peculiar to positive Christianity. So to see Hitler in private promoting these specific doctrines of positive Christianity tells us that he was very much aligned with this particular sect of Christianity. And yes, you can certainly say it's a perversion of the original teachings of Christianity, but you could say that about a lot of different sectarian schisms within Christianity throughout history. And it really did grow out of this. When we look at, for example, this idea of opposing and destroying the Jews, the program, Hitler's program against the Jews, line by line by line, is identical to Martin Luther's program against the Jews. And positive Christianity was very much taking things that they wanted out of Lutheranism, which they regarded as the truer version of Christianity within the German tradition. They took pieces of Lutheranism and imported it into this new sect, this sort
okay.
of sect crowd of Lutheran Christianity.
If I could bring in Richard Weikart at this point, because I think you've spat out very well there. But and Richard, the main point being, you're defining Christianity too narrowly. This was a form of Christianity, even though you see it as aberrant and, I guess, heretical when it comes to the standard definition of Christianity. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to know, do you have a good reason to say, no, that is not Christian? If it crosses this particular line, you can no longer describe Hitler's beliefs as Christian.
Well, everything that Richard Carey said there, and also in an earlier article that I read of his, where he talks about Hitler believing in God, Jesus, providence, and immortality of the soul. All of those things could be said about a Muslim, for example. And in fact, by the way, Hitler actually made positive comments about Islam. He actually said that think about Christian and his anti-Christian ideas. He actually said it was a disaster that the Muslims lost the Battle of Tours because he thought Islam was a religion to be preferred to Christianity because it was more of a martial fighting religion and such. So, I mean, if we're going to include all these things in Christianity that Richard Carey wants to suggest are part of Christianity, then I think you just pretty much opened the door to just not defining Christianity at all. And just anyone that believes in God, anything about Jesus, immortality of the soul, then they become Christian. And that's simply, that makes the word Christian meaningless.
What about this anti-Semitic strain that obviously he wanted to draw out? And Richard Carey's view is he was simply kind of carrying on what Martin Luther began, who obviously, as much as he was revered as the founder of the Reformation, he had some pretty anti-Semitic views as well, if you read his writings.
Yes, and Richard Carey is correct. There were quite a number of things in Luther's writings that were carried out under the Nazis. Of course, any time hatred against the Jews is put forward, there's going to be obvious kinds of things that are going to be proposed. And by the way, I certainly agree with Richard Carrier that Luther's anti-Semitism was a horrible thing, and Catholic anti-Semitism, not just Luther, by the way, there was a lot of Catholic anti-Semitism going on throughout the Middle Ages that was going on up into the 19th and 20th century. And I would also agree with, I'm pretty sure Richard Carrier would agree with me here, that a lot of that did have an impact on the development of anti-Semitism of Hitler. So I'm not claiming, by the way, and in my book, Hitler's Religion, I make it clear that Catholic traditions of anti-Semitism, and I think that's actually more influential on Hitler personally. Again, I'm looking at Hitler personally. That's more influential than Lutheran, since Hitler was not raised Lutheran, and Hitler never actually even references Luther's anti-Semitism, interestingly, even though a lot of people make a lot of it. I certainly agree, and I think Richard Carey would agree with me here, that was a horrible influence on anti-Semitism in the 19th and 20th century. So I certainly agree that Hitler was influenced by that. I'm not trying to say there was no influence of this Christian anti-Semitism on Hitler. However, there was one very important distinction that got made in the mid-19th century by anti-Semites who began secularizing anti-Semitism, and who actually, by the way, coined the term anti-Semitism. The term anti-Semitism didn't exist until the 1870s, I believe, somewhere in the mid-19th century anyway. And they secularized anti-Semitism by construing the Jews as being a biological entity, not a religious entity. And so what Luther's proposal for the Jews was that they should convert to Christianity and become assimilated into German culture and society. Hitler's solution Hitler thought that was the absolute worst thing that could happen. He did not want the Jews converting to Christianity and assimilating into German society because he saw them as a biological entity, and that would bring what he saw as bad and inferior biological traits into the German gene pool.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with my guests. We're talking about whether Hitler was anti-Christian. My guests are Richard Weikart and Richard Carrier, both involved in history. Both have studied this particular area and will be continuing as Richard Carrier responds in the next section of the programme to what's been said so far. Look forward to you joining us again in a short moment's time. Is your tinsel looking tired? Does your nativity need a new lease of life? Then do not fear. In the latest edition of Premier Christianity magazine, we've 101 fresh ideas for Christmas in your church. Okay, it's about 27 really. But you'll also find amazing stories of near-death experiences, why culture is turning against porn, and how you can make sure your pastor doesn't burn out. All that plus much more. Request a free sample copy of the December magazine at premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to today's programme. Don't forget that Unbelievable is available online. If you'd like to listen back to today's programme, pass it on to a friend, subscribe to the podcast, find more about us online at Facebook, Twitter and so on. Do go to the website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley and look forward to reading out some of your thoughts on recent shows that have taken place towards the end of today's programme. And straight after Unbelievable, on The Profile, you can hear another Christian talking about their walk of life and faith. That's this afternoon between 4 and 5. Today on the programme, we're asking, was Hitler anti-Christian? A new book by Richard Weikart called Hitler's Religion, The Twisted Beliefs That Drove the Third Reich, aims to show why Hitler was neither an atheist nor a Christian, as atheists and Christians sometimes claim, but a pantheist who believed nature was God. We'll get more from him on that. Richard Carrier is in conversation with him. Richard Carrier is a historian himself, an atheist activist, author, public speaker and blogger. And in his book, Hitler, Homer, Bible, Christ, he aimed to show that anti-Christian quotes often used by Christians to show Hitler was not a Christian were in fact fabrications. They can't be trusted in terms of the original source material, Hitler's table talk, as it's called. But just in that last section of the programme, Richard Carrier, Richard Weikart, again, hitting home the point here that as far as he's concerned, there's, you know, if you open the door to what Hitler believed about Jesus and Christianity as being called Christianity, then you simply swing the door too wide. You might as well call Islam Christianity. And also this point that he made about, yes, of course, the anti-Semitism of Luther was regrettable, though as far as Richard Weikart's concerned, not necessarily that great an influence on Hitler, probably more the anti-Semitism through in Catholicism that influenced him. Anyway, lots to respond to there. Where do you want to begin?
Well, I would just focus on this idea that we're trying to define Christianity in such a way that we can excuse Christianity from blame for any of this, which obviously I think even Weikart agrees that we shouldn't be going that far. If we're going to say that positive Christianity, which was definitely believed and promoted as a Christian sect and regarded as a Christian sect by the Germans and beyond at the time, if we're going to say that positive Christianity is a perversion of Christianity so far that it is therefore no longer Christianity, then we actually have to say the same thing about Hitler's racial Darwinism, that it's actually going so far against what Darwin said that it's a perversion of Darwinism and that that's not really Darwinism. When we look at Darwin's teachings on moral intelligence, then there's Vincent D'Onorchia writes a really good article on this for Philosophy Now online, if people want to look at this. Darwin on moral intelligence, he says. You can really see, and if you compare this to what Hitler said, Hitler said, for example, that man is superior to the animals because he recognizes a creative power. Darwin said that man is superior to the animals because he recognizes the cruelty of Darwinism and thus has sympathy for his fellows, which actually elevates him above the animals. There's no mention in Darwinian thought of Jews being an inferior race or a threat to be eradicated, or even saying that of any race whatsoever. The whole idea of racializing this is not Darwinian at all. Instead, Darwin advocated that moral cooperation in society, helping the weak, is an evolved trait and therefore actually a superior trait, and therefore because it's better than war and killing each other. The idea of turning this around and actually perverting this into some sort of racialized, war-supporting, eradicating a race concept and turning it against the Jews, that all came from Christianity. And Hitler, like I said, Hitler's program against the Jews is really matching up with Christian programs against the Jews. It did not come from the Darwinian side of his thoughts. Now, he racialized, he tried to turn it into some sort of scientific excuse for it, but he also gave Christian excuses for it. And he actually, these things, he's merging them two together, and yes, indeed, creating a perverted form of Christianity that doesn't look like the kind of Christianity that Weikart wants to exist, and it certainly doesn't look like the kind of Darwinism that actual scientists were promoting.
I mean, this plays into other research you've done on the influence of Darwinism, social Darwinism, on Hitler, the eugenics of the Nazi regime and so on, Richard Weikart. But yeah, I guess Richard Carrier is saying that you can't have your cake and eat it. If you're not going to allow Hitler to be a Christian, then Hitler wasn't a Darwinist either. And so don't start to say that, you know, he was, you know, pursuing some form of social Darwinism, since it could be easily argued it was a very perverse form of that. It's an interesting comeback. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised this point. I mean, I think we need to get our definitions down once again. And I do define, in my scholarship on my book From Darwin to Hitler and Hitler's Ethic, I do define Darwinism. I define it very carefully. I define Darwinism as a belief in the transmutation of species that is taking place through the process of natural selection. That's how I define Darwinism. And if you look at Hitler's writings, you'll find that that's exactly what he believed. Now, it's true that Hitler's form of Darwinism, his racialized form of Darwinism, is not going to be the same as the forms of racially egalitarian Darwinism that some people are going to be espousing today, such as Richard Carrier. But nonetheless, it was a form of Darwinism. His claim that Hitler's beliefs were a form of Christianity, though, I think, quite different, again, because if he wants to define, he defines Christianity so broadly that I suppose it does work that way. But if we define Christianity in the way that I do, World Council of Churches' definition of Christianity, which is a pretty widely accepted definition, and which is a pretty broad definition, it's considered an ecumenical definition. And yes, it does exclude Mormons. It does exclude Jehovah's Witnesses. There are people it excludes, as he's suggesting. But it is a pretty standard definition of Christianity that's being used. And if you look at Hitler's own statements about using the word Christianity, okay, because Hitler uses the word Christianity himself. When Hitler uses the word Christianity, it's always negative, except in public speeches where he's trying to appeal to the public. And not even always then, by the way. In Mein Kampf, let me just give one example here from Mein Kampf, and I'll get back to the Darwinism issue in just a second. But in Mein Kampf, Hitler, so this is a public writing, there's no disputing the source material here or anything like that. He's talking about the origins of Christianity. He says, a philosophy filled with infernal intolerance, and by the way, this is interesting because Hitler saw Catholicism and Christianity as a whole as a intolerant religion. Okay, and he criticizes it for its intolerance. And that's actually, he shares with atheist critics, and he's very similar. Hitler liked the Enlightenment thinkers like Frederick the Great and Voltaire and others for their critiques of Christian intolerance. And so he says here, a philosophy filled with infernal intolerance will only be broken by a new idea, driven forward by the same spirit, championed by the same mighty will, and at the same time pure and absolutely genuine in itself. Of course, he's talking about Nazism, replacing it here. Mm. And then he goes on to say, the individual may establish with pain today that with the appearance of Christianity, so here he's talking about what he means by Christianity, with the appearance of Christianity, the first spiritual terror entered into the far freer ancient world, but he will not be able to contest the fact that since then, the world has been afflicted and dominated by this coercion, and that coercion is broken only by coercion, and terror only by terror. Only then can a new state of affairs be constructively created. So when Hitler uses the word Christianity, he sees it as, he calls it here, a spiritual terror that is afflicting the world. So the claim that Hitler is buying into this positive Christianity, that was eyewash. That was just for the public to get them on board so that he didn't offend them. And he even says this, by the way, when he was in prison with Hess, he told Hess, I'm playing the religious hypocrite, you know, because I don't want my movement to be destroyed by taking an anti-Christian position. But when Hitler uses the word Christianity, he uses it he calls it spiritual terror that is afflicting the world.
And generally, do you think that's always the case with Hitler's other speeches, which is, I've heard atheist quote to me, where he kind of seems to uphold the church in some way or another. Was it always essentially politically motivated, as far as you can see?
As far as I can tell, it's always public. Again, in private, he never makes these kinds of pro-Christian statements. There's absolutely no evidence from any private source that any of his associates, his colleagues, memoirs, diaries, and like Goebbels' diaries and Rosenberg's diaries that we have, do talk about Hitler's conversations and his relations about religion. And in none of those places does he make any kind of pro-Christian statements, but actually speaks against Christianity and uses the word Christianity and speaks against what he sees as Christianity.
Okay, we will come back to the Darwinism thing, but do you want to respond to that view on Hitler's Christianity and the view there, Richard Carey, that evidently when you look at passages like that in Mein Kampf, whatever he may have given lip service to in terms of Christianity, be it official or this positive Christianity. He obviously saw it overall as a blight. It's hardly glowing terms that he's describing the advent of Christianity in there in Mein Kampf, is it?
Well, look at the context. He's talking about Catholicism. He's talking about the use of coercion. He's talking about suppressing heresy. So he's actually talking about the context of this perversion that Paul created that led to the Catholic Church, that led to persecution of non-agreeing sects. This is anti-sectarianism. This is not anti-Christian view. So this is, and there are a lot of Christians who agree with this. There's a lot of Christians who are also against hell. The use of hell doctrine to terrorize people is something that Hitler criticized. There are a lot of Christians who also criticize that use within Christianity. They're not anti-Christian. They're just against a particular Christian doctrine. And this is the context that Hitler's talking about. He's talking about Catholicism. This is positive Christianity creeping through, this idea that Catholicism was a perversion of the true religion and that it resulted in this kind of this terror on society where they're actually using force to coerce people to believe. And Hitler actually advocated this idea that people should not have to be coerced, which is ironic considering what he did. But what his preaching was this idea that all the Christian sects should get rid of their dogmas and they should all be unified, that there shouldn't be sectarianism, that there should just be one free religion. And he often talked in glowing terms about this future state of the world where everybody will be in agreement, that'll be wonderful, and there won't be these doctrines, and there won't be the use of coercion won't be necessary anymore, and all of this stuff. I think that's utopian and ridiculous of him to think that, considering all the horrible things that he was doing to coerce people. But there's a disconnect between his behavior and his beliefs in this regard. But definitely this is the thing that he's talking about. He's talking about Catholicism. He's talking about coercion. He's talking about institutionalized religion. He's talking about sectarianism. He's not lambasting the idea that there should be a Christian society or that he should be a Christian.
I mean, I guess my question, Richard Carrier, is what's left once he's kind of, dismissed all of the, whatever his views were of the Catholic Church and Christian doctrines, if he's saying none of that is true, it's all a perversion of what he obviously had this bizarre Arian view of Jesus and so on. I mean, it feels to me all you're left with is a very strange kind of dogma that essentially was there to prop up his particular type of racism. And I don't know, I can understand Richard Weikart feeling like, well, calling that Christianity is a bit of a stretch. It's obviously something that seems like a useful sort of thing to kind of use as an ideological framework for what he wanted to do with the world. I mean, do you really think he did think of himself as a Christian? Is that really kind of what you think he genuinely thought? I am a Christian because I have these views.
Yeah, and he would, if someone were to probe, he would say, if he were to be honest, he would say, I espouse and agree with the views of positive Christianity, which it believed in that nature was created by God and that all of nature's laws were put in place by God and represent God's will, that God had providence for the world and that Hitler was at his actions against the Jews is actually part of God's providence. He believed that he was going to go to heaven. He talks about how he expects to go to heaven and live with heroes rather than weaklings, enlightened spirits and some sort of Olympus, he says. So he had different views than some Christians about who would go to heaven and things like that. But he did expect this, and he expected this because he fulfilled God's law.
What you described there, though, is essentially what Richard Weikart calls pantheism. And so you're kind of using just different words for the same religious views.
Well, it's definitely a personal God. Pantheism is the view that nature and God are the same thing. Hitler very clearly distinguished nature as a created thing and not as identical with God. I mean, he talks about nature being created, that there's a creative power, that there's providence that's separate from, and that is realized through God's creation and navigation of nature. And that God is a personal being and that there's going to be an afterlife. Pantheists don't usually adhere to that concept. So when you look at all of these elements, it's definitely looking a lot more like a proper theism, at least. And it's got all these elements of Christianity in it that he's borrowed. He's taken the pieces of Christianity that he wants and ditched the pieces of Christianity that he doesn't, just like every other sect that splits off and creates its own version of Christianity.
Sure. Okay, Richard Weikart, it's not pantheism. Whatever it was, it's not pantheism, says Richard Carrier. What's your response to that?
Well, Hitler does, of course, use the term God, providence, quite freely in a number of places, and the word creator as well. In fact, I have a whole chapter in my book called Was Hitler a Creationist? Because this has been thrown at me, too, that Hitler was a creationist, because he does use the word creator at various times. What's interesting, though, if you look at those particular passages, like in Mein Kampf and in Hitler's second book and elsewhere, where he's actually talking about those things, he does tend to deify nature. In fact, interestingly, the translators of Mein Kampf even capitalize the word nature in those contexts. Now, we don't know if Hitler would have done that because he capitalized all nouns, because that's how German is written. But certainly they recognized that there was something more to it than just nature as nature. And in Mein Kampf, the word nature and God get used interchangeably in a number of occasions. And in the passage where Hitler talks about how by fighting against the Jews, I'm doing the work of the Lord, in the context there, it gives... It is talking about nature and about the aristocratic, what he calls the aristocratic laws of nature. And the very sentence in front of that, it says that eternal nature avenges the transgression of its commands. That's a paraphrase. I'm not an exact quote, but it's very close to that. But he does use the term eternal nature there, as well as a number of other passages. And I give a number of examples of this in my book, Hitler's Religion. So if nature is eternal, as Hitler is saying that it is, then it wasn't created by some other kind of being. That makes Hitler not a deist, not a theist, because there's nothing creating nature. Nature itself becomes the creative agent. So when Hitler's talking about creator, he's actually identifying that with nature. He sees nature itself as being creative. And I do agree with Richard Carey, by the way, that he saw himself as obeying the divine will, but the divine will was the laws of nature, because he thought the Darwinian struggle for existence was one of the highest laws of nature that he needed to try to fulfill. And so he actually saw himself as driving evolution forward by killing people who he considered inferior, whether it be the Jews, whether it be people with disabilities, the Sinti, the Roma, or Slavs, or anyone else.
I mean, what I'm getting from you then is okay, he was not an atheist. He was not a theist. He was this pantheist. Right. And it's interesting to hear you talk about this, because one of my other heroes contemporaneously with Hitler, of course, is C.S. Lewis, who talks an awful lot more than apologists do today about pantheism in some of his books. So it's obviously a kind of a going concern of the sort of 1930s and 40s and so on, this particular view of nature and God. But the thing I'm getting from you is that because he was not a materialist, a naturalist in that sense, as I guess someone like Richard Carrier is, and who would see the evolution and Darwinism as simply something that happens and something we are subject to, but not something that is in a sense ordained in any sense. But what you're saying, Richard Weikart, is that Hitler had a view that this Darwinist view of life actually was a law to be driven forward, something that was a teleological in that sense, that the reason the fittest survived is because that was the way things should be. Is that kind of what I'm getting from you there?
Yes, exactly. I argue in my earlier book, Hitler's Ethic, and also in Hitler's Religion, I have a chapter on his morality. I believe that he was motivated by evolutionary ethics. And I draw this in Hitler's Religion, in that chapter on his morality, I make very clear the distinctions between Christian ethics and morality on the one hand, and Hitler's vision of morality and ethics on the other hand, which was an evolutionary ethic.
Okay, Richard Carrier, time to have your say on this now. What do you make of this particular view that if you look at what he said about nature, Hitler clearly equated nature and God, and therefore you can't really call him a theist. And in fact, it plays into this idea that he saw social Darwinism as somehow, you know, being the thing ordained in nature, that he was therefore progressing with his regime.
Yeah, no, it's common to have spoken that way, even as far back as the founding fathers, that also talk about nature and as if it were the same thing as God, and using it in the capitals and so on. But the key thing here is that Hitler believed that God made nature, and therefore, when you follow the laws of nature, you were actually obeying the will of God. And anyone who tried to go against the laws of nature was going against the will of God, not because nature was God, because nature was created by God and represents and embodies God's will. And we have examples like where Weikert constantly refers to this use of the word eternal. Hitler never says past eternal. There's this confusion between future eternal and past eternal. Hitler never says the universe was past eternal. He only says eternal in the sense that it's never going to end. It's always going to, once it's instituted, it's eternal. So there's no evidence actually that Hitler believed that the universe wasn't created. Hitler actually refers to, what separates man from the animals again is that we recognize this creative power. He was certainly not a young Earth creationist, but there's no evidence that he believed that the universe was past eternal. So we can't get this pantheism out of these sort of vague references. He's using the phrase eternal nature to point out that God's will is eternal, that once God has instituted the laws of nature, they will last forever, and you can't oppose them, you can't change them. And so this isn't pantheism. This is a form of creationism.
I mean, we could maybe ask Richard again, Richard Weikart, to elucidate his references for why he does think it qualifies as pantheism. But what about the social Darwinism as well? This idea that Hitler felt he was obviously undertaking some kind of progress that was required by the nature of the Darwinism that he obviously believed in at some level.
Yeah, all of that comes from Christianity, right? There's nothing in Darwinism says anything about Jews being a separate species. Nothing says anything about a competition between races. Nothing in there says anything about this idea that the struggle requires us to kill weaker races or even weaker people. In fact, Darwin explicitly said that what actually represents us as the pinnacle of evolution is that we've actually recognized the cruelty and inefficiency of this Darwinian method of killing the weak, and that we actually have sympathy for our fellows and actually help the weak, and that actually makes us a stronger and superior species. So when you see all of this stuff perverted and reversed, where is all that stuff coming from? This idea that the Jews are the enemy, that we have to kill them, even if it's being racialized with the Darwinian view, the stuff that's actually being targeting against the Jews, the stuff that's actually talking about like eliminating weaker races and stuff like that, that all comes from prior Christian thought. Now, it's sorted and it's mixed up, right? So we're confusing religion with race and all of this is going on. But the idea of the biology comes from Darwinism, but the idea of attaching it to specific people like the Jews or the black or gay people who are also thrown into the concentration camps, all of that concept comes from prior Christian belief.
Okay.
And it doesn't come from...
It's a good argument, Richard Weikart. Coming back to you again then. Two things again there. Firstly, Richard Carey says the fact is there was a God that Hitler believed in behind the nature doesn't necessarily believe in a past eternal universe either, so some kind of creation. And secondly, Darwinism is neutral as a sort of statement of what happens in nature. It was Hitler who attached these religious associations of certain people, types of people and so on, who should be eliminated. So just a couple of minutes before we have to go to our final break. Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quickly on the eternal nature thing, I just invite people to read the context of the passages themselves. God and nature are conflated in those passages, and perhaps Richard Carey and I are just going to have to disagree on that. On the issue of Darwinism and the competition between races, this is just completely wrong. I mean, read The Descent of Man. In The Descent of Man, Darwin spends a good deal of time talking about competition between races and talks about lower races and higher races and how the Australian Aborigines are being beat out in the struggle for existence by the superior European races. I mean, it's there in Darwinism. But I don't see anywhere in Christianity talk about annihilation of races, extermination, extinction of races. I mean, Darwin has a whole section, by the way, there's a whole section of Descent of Man, several pages long. The section is entitled The Extinction of Races. So this is in Darwinian thought. And so Hitler isn't just making this up. And if you look at Ernst Haeckel's views, who was the most famous German Darwinist in the late 19th, early 20th century, Ernst Haeckel very clearly was teaching that different races exterminated other races in the course of the struggle for existence. So Hitler didn't get this from any Christian context that we should go out and exterminate races. This is although obviously racism pre-existed Darwinism, but Darwinism integrated that racism into his theory. And
but isn't Richard Carrier's point
going on?
Isn't Richard Carrier's point that Darwin may have been describing what happens in the struggle for survival, but that in his own personal reflections on it, he believed humans were, because of our being the pinnacle of this evolutionary process, we should show compassion and kindness and to people and so on. In contrast to obviously Hitler's own views on that.
Darwin did at times make comments that were a little bit more positive toward the extermination of races than that. The attempt he talked about compassion was talking about internal within societies, not in the racial context. But Richard Carey's point is well taken about the Jews. I mean, the Jews issue, that was Darwin had absolutely nothing to do with anti-Semitism. The only times he mentions the Jews on a couple of occasions that I've been able to find, he makes very positive references toward them. But if you also look at the German Darwinists who came after Darwin, many of them were much more rabidly racist than Darwin himself. And so Hitler was in the German context, even though we don't have evidence that he specifically read Ernst Haeckel. He certainly was familiar with Haeckel's ideas, and he talks about a number of Haeckel's ideas on a lot of occasions. He certainly believed in human evolution and such. So, yes, the Jews issue that has nothing to do with Darwinism, that was integrated into it. But it was integrated into it by people before Hitler, too, like Theodor Fritsch, who was one of the most prominent anti-Semite thinkers in the early 20th century Germany. Fritsch was a very rabid social Darwinist who believed the Jews were an inferior race and that they were that there was a struggle for existence going on between the Aryans. And so did Chamberlain's ideas about the racial struggle also tie in here as well.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm just fascinated by the history lesson being received on Unbelievable today. Hope you are too. Was Hitler anti-Christian? Our question. Two different perspectives join me as ever on the program. Richard Carrier and Richard Weikart will be continuing this discussion, concluding it in just a moment's time.
In July 2016, Unbelievable, the conference took place in London, a day for any Christian who struggles to share their faith with others.
I'm Justin Brierley, and I hosted a fantastic day of inspirational sessions with J. John, Gary Habermas, Beth Grove, and many others.
Now you've got the chance to watch and listen to over 12 hours of this empowering conference,
featuring evangelism, apologetics, and the resurrection.
Get your DVD at premier.org.uk/shop and become a confident evangelist today.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Unbelievable, the program that brings Christians and non-Christians together. We'll be finishing our discussion on Hitler, whether he was anti-Christian, in a moment. We'll be hearing some of your feedback as well to last week's program a little later. That was between Mike McCarg, or Science Mike, as he's often known online. His story of going from being a Christian to an atheist and finding faith again through science. He was in conversation with an ex-Christian last week. That was Ben Watts, who lost his faith through science. And varied kind of responses, actually, to that programme. So we'll be hearing some of what you had to say about that. Don't forget that Unbelievable is brought to you as part of Faith Explored here on Premier Christian Radio. And Faith Explored itself brought to you in association with Premier Christianity Magazine. I'm the senior editor of the MAG. I know that a number of people who do listen to Unbelievable also subscribe to the magazine, but if you're not among them and you'd like to find out more about the MAG, you can find our website at premierchristianity.com. Got a very regularly updated blog there, and in fact I contributed one of the most recent pieces this last week. If you are a regular listener to Unbelievable, you may remember several weeks ago I spoke to Max McLean, who is the founder of the Fellowship of Performing Arts and responsible for bringing over an adaptation of C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters to a London theatre. Well, it's currently playing, and I was able to see it at one of the opening performances last week, and so I put up a review of it. I thought it was a brilliant sort of show. I'll read a little bit of my blog out towards the end of today's programme as well. But if you want that blog and other interesting thoughts on culture, opinion, apologetics, and much more besides, the Premier Christianity blog is well worth checking out. PremierChristianity.com/blog. And if you want a free sample copy of the latest magazine and literally just hitting doormats now, our January edition, believe it or not, with loads of really interesting content, you can actually get hold of a free sample copy as well at premierchristianity.com/free sample. Okay, let's get into the final part of today's show.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So we're concluding our discussion today. Was Hitler anti-Christian here on Unbelievable? This is the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and debate. And our non-Christian is Richard Carrier, historian, atheist, activist, author, public speaker and blogger. Well known, and he's been on the show before talking about it in previous years for his mythicist view of Jesus. But he's also researched the religious views of Hitler, detailed in his book Hitler, Homer, Bible, Christ. Make sure there are links to Richard and the book from today's episode online, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Our other Richard has been Richard Weikart, Professor of History at California State University, whose new book, Hitler's Religion, The Twisted Beliefs That Drove the Third Reich, aims to show why Hitler was neither an atheist nor a Christian, but a pantheist. And that was certainly part of what took up our discussion in the last section of the show. And as we've discussed this whole question of what Hitler really believed and whether these beliefs kind of drove the ideology of the Nazi party. It's been a fascinating discussion, gentlemen. Thank you very much again for coming on and talking about this. Richard Carrier, you obviously believe that Christianity at some level, even if Christians like Richard Weikart say it was a perverse form of Christianity, you still say Christianity did have a significant hand in advancing what happened in Germany during the war years and before. So, I mean, obviously there were people like, you know, famously Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who represented a form of Christianity very much opposed to whatever type of Christianity Hitler claimed to represent. But for you, does it matter kind of at the end of the day which types of Christianity we're talking about? For you, if Hitler claimed the word Christian, then Christianity was involved in his rise to power at some level. Is that what I'm getting from you?
Oh, yes. And not just that, it's influential, right? So it's influencing, regardless of what you think, how you want to describe his particular religion. Of course, he described it as Christian. Others described it as Christian. It matches up line by line with positive Christianity, which was widely regarded as a Christian sect. It was actually regarded as more normative as a Christian sect than the Jehovah's Witnesses, who were one of the most opposed to Hitler's program in Germany. In fact, the Jehovah's Witnesses were widely rounded up and thrown in the concentration camps, or outright executed. And yet I would regard the Jehovah's Witnesses obviously as a Christian sect, and they didn't believe in the divinity of Jesus. They have different set of beliefs than other Christians, and they're excluded by Weikart's definition of Christianity, and I think that's unfortunate because they were some of the biggest champions of what Weikart would probably believe is the Christian reasons to be opposed to Hitler's regime, and a lot of them died for it. But nonetheless, Hitler's got his own perverted form of Christianity, and I see here in America now, I'm really concerned by this kind of Christian nationalism that we see as elected Donald Trump. We have 80% of white evangelicals voted for this guy promoting, you know, ideas of demonizing Hispanics and Muslims in much a similar way to the way Hitler was doing it. Now, he's not calling for concentration camps, but neither did Hitler explicitly. So we see the same idea of this warmongering, this idea that that there's a superiority to being strong versus weak. There's a lot of these similar elements in this evangelical, white evangelical strain that's promoting Donald Trump. And you can see how it could get perverted further into a straight-up new form of positive Christianity, the same way the Germans did. And so I think this is something we need to be very vigilant about. We should not try to pretend that Christianity cannot do this or cannot go there. We need to be vigilant. And there's a reason why the phrase "never forget" has become, you know, an idiom today. And that's the thing we need to really be armed against. And we have to look at what were the Christian influences that caused Hitler to do what he did, that caused him to pervert both Christianity and Darwinism and create this weird amalgam of the two that is neither Darwinism nor Christianity by Weikart's definition.
Okay.
So we need to be constantly vigilant against that and not try to hide it.
Okay. I mean, it sounds a little bit like Richard Carrier saying there, Richard Weikart, you're trying to kind of exclude Hitler from Christianity by tightly defining it as you know, but that kind of is to not to give a true picture of the kind of influences that were at play in the rise of the Third Reich and so on. Go ahead.
Well, again, I use a pretty expansive definition. It's not a real restrictive definition. It's considered an ecumenical definition, the World Council of Churches definition. And yet, Richard Carrier's right. It does exclude the Jehovah's Witnesses. However, we've talked a lot about the influences of Catholicism and Christianity on Hitler. And I'm not denying that there were all sorts of influences of Catholicism and Christianity on Hitler. It would be stupid, I think, to make that kind of an argument because he's growing up in a context in the Western culture. I think Richard Carrier probably has lots of influences of Christianity in his life, despite the fact that he's an atheist. So I'm certainly not trying to argue that Hitler had zero influence of Christianity. And I would agree with Richard Carey that we should examine and see what elements those are. And in my chapter where I talk about Hitler's anti-Semitism, I admit that Christian forms of anti-Semitism did feed into the anti-Semitism that was pervading Germany in the 19th and 20th centuries, and that thus fed into Hitler. Although I also then point out that it became secular. There was new kind of secularized forms of anti-Semitism that emerged there. But what we haven't yet talked about, and that maybe I'd like to bring up just in these last couple minutes, is that there were also a lot of anti-Christian influences on Hitler that we haven't mentioned so far. For instance, if we ask who was Hitler's favorite philosopher, as it turns out, Hitler's favorite philosopher was Arthur Schopenhauer, who was an atheist. And Hitler claimed that he carried around Schopenhauer's books and complete works in his backpack when he was in World War I, and makes other claims about Schopenhauer later on. This idea about Schopenhauer had this sort of an idea of an impersonal will that was extremely important in Hitler's thinking. Hitler also revered Friedrich Nietzsche when he talked about who he thought some of the three greatest philosophers were. Nietzsche was also one of the persons on that list. And Hitler, I have a photo in my book showing Hitler across from a Nietzsche bust when he was visiting the Nietzsche archives, because Hitler visited the Nietzsche archives on several occasions and gave of his own personal funds to the Nietzsche archives. So here we have Hitler, even though it's sometimes he's publicly portraying himself as being Christian, he's publicly portraying himself as being Nietzschean also at the same time, who's, of course, famous for his dictum, God is dead. That doesn't mean Hitler was an atheist, but it does mean that Hitler sees something in Nietzsche that he really likes, and Schopenhauer as well. So Hitler revered atheist philosophers and was receiving a lot of influences from non-Christian and atheistic sources as well. It wasn't just Christianity that was influencing him. It was atheism. It was pantheism. There was a whole Hitler drew on a wide variety of sources. And yes, I agree with Richard Carey that we should look at all of those and see how they've influenced him and try to avoid those problems that the atrocities that were committed as a result of that.
Mm. Fascinating stuff. Richard Carey, Richard Weikart, thank you very much. Both, I think, excellently held your corners as historians on this subject. Really appreciate the dialogue that we've had on the programme today. Richard Carey, where should people go to find out more about you and your writings and speaking and books and so on?
Everything you can get to through www.richardcarrier.info, that's .info. All my social media, all my books, my online teaching, everything you might be interested in, my blogging and so forth, is all warehoused through there. You can find it all through richardcarrier.info.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us on the program again. Hopefully we'll get you on again at some point in 2017. Who knows? Great to have you on the program today. Richard Weikart, similarly, thanks to you. For people to find out more about you and the book, where should they go?
Well, for this particular book, you're going to have to actually go to Amazon or one of the other websites there. I don't actually have it up on any of the DarwinToHitler.com has information about some of my earlier works. I don't think we got this one up yet on there. Or just Google my name, my website, and I have a university website, but much too long to give it out right here. So just Google my name and you'll find it.
Yes, you've written quite a few interesting articles related to this as well. We didn't get time to discuss it, but an interesting discovery you made about a photo in the book as well.
That came out pretty recently in the stream about Dr. Hitler's doctored photo of Hitler. Yeah, just Google that doctored photo, my name, Weikart. Google that and you'll probably find that up too. That photo, by the way, is in the book also. It's a doctored photo of Hitler with a cross over his head, and then it got airbrushed away in a later version. And by the way, that's the only doctored photo that any Nazi historian that I've talked to so far knows about.
Wow, interesting. Interesting stuff anyway. Let yourselves in for a bit of history. Read the book. I'll make sure there's links as well from the Unbelievable website as well. But Richard Weikart and Richard Carrier, thank you both for being with me on today's programme.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. It's been great.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, as ever, if you want to get in touch, you can email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Look forward to hearing from you that way. You can also, of course, leave your thoughts on Facebook and Twitter. Follow the show at UnbelievableJB on Twitter, facebook.com/UnbelievableJB for the show page. I quite often post the latest show, obviously, thoughts on other things and indeed interesting blogs. Quite a few of the blogs that Premier Christianity magazine publish end up on the Facebook page of Unbelievable. unbelievable as well. That includes, for instance, the review that I put up this last week of The Screwtape Letters, new adaptation of C.S. Lewis's classic book, playing in London over Christmas and into the new year. It's a great adaptation. I'll read you in a moment a little bit of the review that I put up on our blog recently. But you might be interested to know, those who listened last week, and I talked a little bit about the Chris Goswami blog, why I don't have enough faith to be an atheist, and some of the kickback that got from atheists responding on the Unbelievable Facebook page. We've just put up a response from an atheist, Corey Markham, who's a previous guest a couple of times on this programme. So again, another good reason to go and visit the blog if you can, premierchristianity.com/blog, or simply go on to the Unbelievable Facebook page, facebook.com/unbelievablejb, and you'll find that I've posted it there. But going back to that review of the Screwtape Letters that's been playing in London for the last week and a half or so, and it will be continuing, I think, through to the 7th of January. This is what I wrote, just the intro at least, to my blog review of it. 75 years later, Screwtape still steals the show. A new adaptation of C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters proves the devil may not have the best music, but he still has most of the best lines. First published in 1942, The Screwtape Letters was the novel that propelled C.S. Lewis to international fame before he'd even begun to compose the Narnia Chronicles, the children's literature for which he's most well known. The genius of Lewis's book, in which a senior devil Screwtape gives advice to his nephew Wormwood, a junior demon, on tempting a human patient on Earth, was the way in which morality was inverted. Good becomes bad and bad becomes good as Screwtape dispenses devilish guidance on how best to provoke the pride, gluttony and other vices of the human his underling has been assigned to. Like the Narnia stories, Screwtape had an appeal beyond a specifically Christian audience, and various dramatic adaptations of the book by well-known actors such as John Cleese and Andy Serkis have proved that its themes have continued to speak to the wider public. In the decades since it was written, avarice, pride and gluttony have never gone away, even if the methods for indulging them have changed. Perhaps this is what convinced Max MacLean, founder of Christian Theatre Company, the Fellowship of Performing Arts, to bring his theatrical adaptation of Screwtape to UK shores this Christmas. Sticking closely to the text of the book, this 90-minute one-act play is a dramatic monologue by MacLean, who plays the titular role. The only other character is his animated secretary of sorts, Toadpipe, a role much expanded from the book to allow for some dramatic license on stage alongside MacLean spoken words. The Rolling Stones track Sympathy for the Devil played as the audience congregated in the small venue of the Park Theatre, Finsbury, where the play runs until the 7th of January. The intimate setting puts you in almost uncomfortably close proximity to Screwtape, who inhabits an office in hell, furnished with a leather armchair, footstool and an innovative mail chute for the receiving and sending of his correspondence. The bones of the damned provide a decorative backdrop, and there's a suitably fiery red tinge of lighting to the proceedings. You can read the rest of my blog review of Screwtape, now playing in London. Do recommend you go and see it. Max MacLean just does a fantastic job as the devil Screwtape. That's available at premierchristianity.com/blog, or indeed, as I say, go to the Facebook page, scroll back a few entries back to, I think, the 12th of December, and you'll find that I posted it there as well. facebook.com/unbelievablejb. Don't forget, you can subscribe to Premier Christianity magazine. Might be something nice to do or to give to someone for the new year by going to our website and checking that out. premierchristianity.com/free sample to get hold of a free sample copy. See what you'd be getting yourself into. Okay, let's look at some of your emails and correspondence regarding last week's programme. And that was Mike McCarg and atheist Ben Watts. Mike was an atheist. Well, he was a Christian. Then he became an atheist. Then he's gone back to being a Christian. Well, depends on your definition of Christian. And that was one of the things we sort of discussed on the programme itself. But he's got a fascinating story. Here's some of what you said on the Facebook once I put the podcast up on the Facebook page. Solomon Parker, great show. If it weren't for Mike, I don't know where I would be. Sounds interesting, Solomon. You might want to flesh that out a bit. John Osborne says, the show wasn't what I expected, but it was very interesting nevertheless. It made me feel a bit better about my own status of non-materialist atheist / agnostic. The problem is, with most faith, it seems you're either fully convinced or you're damned. The show made me think that it might be okay to not be sure. Jennifer said, this is so good. Thanks again, Justin. And here's a few of your comments from underneath the show. If you go to the webpage itself, where you can listen back to the programme on the Unbelievable website. There's various people who have left comments and responses to those comments and so on. A regular kind of community, really, that gathers in the comment section underneath each show week by week. Here's Andrew, who said, Justin, this is a renewed call for you to publish a calendar of upcoming episodes, especially where the guest has a publication that's likely to be discussed. We, as listeners and contributors, would like to familiarise ourselves with the work prior to an episode. Publishing a schedule would prime the pump for each week's debate and help eliminate ambiguity and speculation around guests from all quarters. Thank you very much, Andrew. It is a lovely idea. The problem for me is that, if I'm completely honest, I don't always know what 2 weeks in advance exactly what is going to be on a show. It just depends how far ahead I'm able to plan these things, and it isn't always far enough ahead to really be able to give good notice, particularly as to which particular weekend they're going to air. But I appreciate that. It's something maybe we'll try and work towards in the future, and thank you for raising it. I'm really humbled, really, that you see the programme as important enough to want to obviously be well read before you actually hear the guests doing their discussions. Dr. Richard Walsh says, good discussion. Ben commendably maintains his atheistic stance and is not persuaded by Mike and his mystical experience on the seashore following an obvious auditory hallucination, otherwise known as locution. These experiences are not uncommon and usually non-pathological. Neuroscience has now successfully demonstrated the neurological causative factors left amygdaloid hyperactivity particularly undoubtedly responsible. Finding God in the waves is most surely purely anecdotal, subjective, no doubt transformative, but hardly convincing, given the universality of religious experiences as recorded in all culture at all times. The odd thing is that in a sense, Mike McCarg isn't going to disagree that it could all be explained by physical things in the brain. I mean, that's kind of the point. The question is that all that's going on? And as I say, I would recommend the book. You may want to get hold of it and read it, Dr. Richard Walsh. Tyler B., regarding the apparent contradiction of Mike saying he's both a non-theist and a Christian, it's a shame that Justin or Ben didn't ask the simple questions to provide some basic clarification. Whether Mike believes in the divinity of Jesus, the resurrection, the atonement, etc. However, Mike explained more clearly on the Life After God podcast, hosted by ex-Christian Ryan Bell, that the God he now talks about is closer to Einstein's God, or Tara's God. You refer there to Tara, another regular poster. He clearly doesn't believe in the God of the Bible and therefore not in the divinity of Jesus, the resurrection, the atonement, etc. So Mike belongs to the group of non-believing Christians, like Christian atheists, cultural Christians, or those who just follow Christian morality. I have some Christian relatives who don't believe in the resurrection, but they support Christian churches as a force for good in society. Supporters of Christian churches are therefore Christian on that basis. Well, OK, understand. I haven't had a chance to properly listen, actually, to Mike's interview with Ryan Bell on the Life After God podcast. I mean, from what he said in our discussion here on Unbelievable was that he had, having gone through this whole experience, approached a more what he called orthodox Christian view that he couldn't give us a kind of, you know, objective argument for. But he said, I think in that conversation with Ben, you know, I do have a Christology of Christ, a high Christology, but not one that I can give you a sort of objective evidence for in the way that I could for, you know, a scientific argument or so on. So I don't know. Maybe that's one you would need to ask Mike McCarg directly about exactly where he stands on those kinds of issues. But in any case, thanks for getting in touch. On email, quite a few people getting in touch. Tim F. in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Don't worry about pronouncing it, he puts in brackets. I've been listening faithfully for a number of years and only seem to respond when I'm mad. So I hope you're encouraged in that you receive very few emails from me. But that being said, this week's episode on finding God in the waves, I was nearly cringing the entire time. My issue wasn't with Ben at all. It was almost completely with Mike. Besides the podcast being little more than a plug for his book, the entire stance Mike takes is simply something foreign to Orthodox Christianity. The Bible describes the Christian as a once God-hating, dead to spirit, spirituality slave of sin, who's chosen, redeemed, sanctified, and supernaturally changed by God to a God-loving, sin-hating slave of righteousness, who studies, loves, knows, and imbibes the scriptures. I've no doubt Mike's a nice guy and a pleasure to be around, but I had a hard time differentiating what he described as Christianity from something I'd get from Deepak Chopra or Oprah or, well, let's face it, Rob Bell. Dancing around truth, trying to define a hodgepodge of unoffensive spiritualistic all-you-need-is-love, translucent, ungrounded spirituality is not the rock of stumbling cornerstone, uncompromisable truth called Christianity that caused the death of countless early church Christians who refused to bend to Rome. Thank you very much. Sorry I can't read all of your email, but we get the message, Tim. You just didn't think that there was any substance to Mike's Christianity, whatever he'd come back to. Others, different points of view. Here's Josh Grieve, who says, "Dear Justin, I'd like to chime in on your atheist guest Ben's comment regarding Mike's take on prayer and what separates that from simple atheistic meditation. Just listening to how Mike described his faith, no matter what one may think of his definition or lack thereof regarding God, the fact is that he views it as a personal and all-loving entity. So in prayer, a materialist can do nothing but surrender themselves to a chaotic, impersonal force, I suppose, called nature. They can't trust that nature loves them, knows them, cares about them. They're surrendering like a fugitive surrenders to a squad of police he was trying to evade. And there might be peace in that, but the peace is nothing more than simply accepting the undesirable before an unrelenting force, incapable of love or consciousness. Mike, on the other hand, believes that he is surrendering himself before an entity likened to a father or a mother, whose will he does not pretend to know or understand, but whose will he nevertheless trusts, or at least desires to trust. While I believe the God Mike seeks and talks to is more tangible and knowable than Mike recognises, it's rather the point of the incarnation, everything leading up to it and everything that has happened since, I think he's spot on with prayer. I won't disagree with Job that our prayer can somehow affect divine will, but that concept is so mysterious it's almost impossible to know what to do with it. So as a general rule, at the very least, I think Mike's approach to prayer is fundamentally orthodox in Christian terms. Finally, just to put the spotlight on something I mentioned above in passing, I find that many who tend on a track to mystify Christianity, I would say over-mystify, as it seems Mike and others like Peter Enns increasingly seem to be doing, is to risk missing out on the beauty and raw power of the incarnation. Whether one is drawn to a more dogmatic approach to Christianity or not, all church dogma that exists has been essentially attempts to safeguard that beautiful and violent reality. Without it, Christianity really isn't Christianity, and that may be fine for some. My mentioning this isn't to challenge Mike, simply to highlight that exciting truth that I think Mike and others have yet to rediscover. And when he does, well, I'm excited for Mike, as it is, but I have a feeling that Mike may feel even more of an urgency to help others around him know this very powerful Creator God who entered his own creation. Wonderful show, Justin. Josh, out in Michigan. Thank you, Josh. Suitably incarnational for this time of year as well. Really appreciate everyone who's got in touch. Maybe just time for one more. This from Dave in Glasgow. What an interesting show. Felt you have quite a few people contacting you with difficulties, probably, about Mike's view of the world and that beyond. I found it refreshing, though, and a new lens through which to contemplate my faith. When Mike said God can't be limited by language, it really chimed with me. We as Christians are so ready to place limits on God, I guess so we can understand him. Why not put our efforts into understanding the work of his hand? Why not celebrate the fact that we can glimpse how he works? We should explore freely, knowing that God's grace will catch us if we trip. I'm just dipping my toe into expanding my faith, and your show is a resource I've yet to find a match for. It's very intriguing. Oh, and in reference to us all describing God differently, I see God as the creator of the maze and a guide that tells us how best to enjoy all the twists and turns it will throw at us. I'm currently binge listening to your back catalogue via podcast and have just made it into 2008. Seriously good show, Justin, most of the time. Smiley face. Please let Mike know his book will hopefully arrive in my hands via Santa. Thank you, Dave. Glad you enjoyed the show, and thank you for getting in touch. Lots more emails, actually, on that. No time to read them this time, but maybe in a future edition of the programme. Do come back again at the same time next week when Christmas will be here. Christmas Eve, next Saturday, I'll be talking about the Star of Bethlehem.
You're unbelievable.
Yes, sir, we're going to be asking, the Star of Bethlehem, fact or fiction? Three different perspectives join me on the show next week. We're going to be hearing from Mark Kidger, who's an astronomer with the European Space Agency. He's an agnostic. We're going to be hearing from Aaron Adair. He's an atheist, and he's done some research into the Star of Bethlehem. He thinks it was just theological fiction. And finally, we'll hear from Colin Nicol, whose book, The Great Christ Comet, was released last year. He believes the Star of Bethlehem was a comet, as the book suggests. So we're going to be hearing all three giving their perspectives, their different theories. I hope you can join us for it. Same time next week. And we wish you, in the meantime, a very happy run-up to Christmas. See you next time.